You're listening to Irish Illustrated Insider. It's Monday, April 18th. I'm Tim Priester with Kevin Sinclair of Irish Illustrated Today and Pete Sampson of The Athletic. We are talking recruiting pretty much in segment one because we've had a lot happening here in the last few days, and then we'll get into more of Notre Dame football, the day-to-day here through spring practice in segment two. But I want to start with you, Kevin. The news over the weekend that Justin Rett, who was visiting Georgia, during his trip to Georgia, he decommitted from Notre Dame. I don't know if that necessarily means that he is locked in with Georgia, but Justin Rett, a real quality player that was an exciting part of class of 2023 for Notre Dame, is no longer there. What can you tell us about that situation?
Yeah, you know, from the outset with Justin Rett, I spoke with him just a couple hours after he had left his first visit, which I think was like June 1st. And not I don't mean this in a negative way at all, but he definitely struck me as more of the kind of kid who would go to a school like Georgia or Oklahoma, something along those lines, more so than Notre Dame. So when they landed Justin Rett, it was kind of one of those, okay, well, it's the Freeman era and we're sort of breaking precedent here. They're going to get these Justin Rett types. And so, you know, eventually, you know, of course, he's decommitted. There was this official visit to Georgia was sort of cooking for a while. And, you know, obviously when you're any program, you know, including Notre Dame, you don't want your players to take, you know, unofficial visits, oftentimes like a 4-hour pot by of a school and you leave. Official visits a much bigger deal. And, you know, when that happens, obviously he's not really committed. So he's decommitted. You know, looking at the sort of impact of that, you know, they don't have a heavy upperclassman crop right now. So looking at the last two classes, that's six cornerbacks. So Ryan Barnes, Phillip Riley, Chance Tucker, Jaden Mickey, Jaden Bellamy, and Benjamin Morrison. So pretty good numbers in the underclassmen ranks there, but again, pretty light in the upperclassmen. So they do need to add in this class, despite adding those six cornerbacks of the last two cycles. And Micah Bell is a guy they offered during that St. Patrick's Day 2024 offer blitz. They also offered a 2023 recruit, Micah Bell. I actually got on the phone with him yesterday. I guess sort of the footnotes on him are, you know, he's from Houston, the Houston metro area. That's where there are tons of big enrollment, big time Texas 6A and 5A programs. But him, his family, and his brother, who is a Georgia 2022 signee, by the way, decided on the Kincaid School, which is a really good private school, you know, which is bodes well for Notre Dame, of course. And, you know, he's a gold medalist in 100-meter, 200-meter long jump, triple jump, 10-4-1 speed. Definitely on the small size where physically, if he were to come to Notre Dame, he would be like a Tariq Bracey type who, you know, might be pushing maybe right around 170 when he arrived and they need to add size. But he brings the kind of speed we haven't seen at Notre Dame on defense in I don't know how long. A truly elite speed, basically Chris Tyree type speed, but more nimble and bouncy and looser in the hips. And that with some instincts, you know, could lead to, you know, an impact corner down the stretch. So that's sort of the talk right now with the Rett decommitment.
I want to talk about Micah Bell a little bit more because I have prepared a film review of him as well. But Pete, did you get any clues to the Justin Rett decision coming up?
I mean, not before it occurred, yeah. But certainly coming out of it, you know, talking to a couple people, not as engaged with the class, you know, which is pretty typical with guys decommitting. I do, you know, whenever you hear a decommit in 2022, you hear all this like, oh, well, it's NIL this, NIL that. I mean, it is Georgia, right? Like Georgia won a bunch of college football games last year. So the idea of someone flipping from Notre Dame to Georgia purely for athletic reasons is not ridiculous. There were a couple comments on social media. I hope they were sarcastic that like, well, I thought Marcus Freeman was going to fix this kinds of thing. Like, that's, you know, this is a human nature college football issue. I think the what Marcus Freeman would fix goes to how much detail Kevin has on somebody like Micah Bell, that Notre Dame has found other options, other sort of threads to pull. Michael Bell, in terms of like his recruiting ranking, Kevin, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, is like basically the same. Like it's comparable, right? So if you lose basically a top 100 style corner, and then you have another one that's almost ready to go, that's a good place to be. I think that shows that is more indicative of organized progressive recruiting than losing, than I think people should be focusing on a singular decommitment.
I understand the surprise because of the difference that Marcus Freeman has made as a recruiter, but this is major college football, and those kind of decisions are going to be made by individual players and recruits, and not even Marcus Freeman can prevent that from happening completely. Christian Gray is also a guy that's still in the mix for Notre Dame at corner. And it was Tom Loy that put in a crystal ball for Micah Bell. And I love Micah Bell's game. He's a little small. There's no doubt about it, but he's savvy, and his speed is, if you're going to use the word blazing, his speed is blazing. I mean, he can absolutely fly. Kevin, I agree with you about his flexibility and his nimbleness. He has that as well. Most of what you see of him on film is at running back, where his vision is just absolutely tremendous. Most guys rely on the blocks of their teammates to free himself up for the alley to run through. He creates those alleys with his foot in the ground and his elusiveness and his ability to bounce around. I think he's a spectacular athlete. He has a lot to learn about cornerback. And we don't know that Notre Dame's got Micah Bell locked up, but I think it's looking pretty good for him. And he is a pretty good, quote, fallback guy when you lose a guy like Justin Rett. Now, Steve Wiltfong from 24/7 Sports put out a crystal ball for 2024 quarterback CJ Carr. And Kevin, that one took me by surprise. What are your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, you know, I think it's surprising for a lot of people initially because, you know, his connections to Michigan, his grandfather, his dad. But, you know, what I did not too long ago is I watched the film of Julian Sain, the other, you know, high-end quarterback in 2024, and CJ Carr. And the way I saw it, this is based on just on highlight film. I thought that CJ Carr, they're both comparable, kind of like top 50 quarterbacks, but CJ Carr looks like he has a bit more size and growth potential, a bit more strength. So I feel like, you know, his ceiling as far as a passer might be a little higher than Sain's, but you're kind of splitting hairs there with two elite quarterbacks. Now, he's out of Michigan, and it's really early, so long way to go there. And I think that's why some would put a pick in this early. But, you know, Steve Wiltfong has been doing this a long time. He put that pick in. Obviously, that's a significant development. It's also interesting that it comes while they're also pursuing another five-star quarterback out of Michigan. So it's going to be interesting to track those. CJ Carr, he is my, you know, personal preference among the two elite quarterbacks you're recruiting there. And it's going to be an interesting one to track.
I think, you know, talking to people around Notre Dame about CJ Carr, you know, sort of in the recruiting industry, like I get the sense that he is the top, he's their top guy on the board at that position, which I don't think I was necessarily like assuming that to be the case. I mean, you look at somebody like, you know, Dylan Raiola from Arizona, who's, you know, five-star number one overall prospect on 24/7, like, you just sort of naturally assume sometimes that, like, well, Notre Dame will see it the same way, but I don't think that's the case at all. And CJ Carr, if like that would be their top guy on the board as it stands right now in 24.
He can fling it, man. I mean, he is the prototypical drop back quarterback that scans the field and just lets it rip. I don't know that he has a cannon per se, but his accuracy is really, really good. I haven't studied him a whole lot, probably nearly as much as you have, Kevin. But the main question here is not so much whether it should be Sain or Carr, but what does this mean with Dante Moore, quarterback of 2023 that just visited Miami, will visit LSU and look at some other places? What do you how do you read this situation? CJ Carr's commitment, I'm sure, doesn't impact Dante Moore. But Dante Moore's commitment could certainly impact CJ Carr's.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just sort of said it. I know that you know, Tom Loy was sort of the first one to kind of break that at Irish Illustrated, where it sort of sounded like, you know, the Dante Moore commitment could impact more negatively the recruitment of CJ Carr versus Julian Sane. And if you're not familiar with Julian Sane, he's a five-star quarterback out of Carlsbad in California. You might remember Asa Turner from a few cycles ago, same school, good program. So that's sort of where that sits, but I don't think you really need to worry about that. The priority has to be Dante Moore, of course. They're in it with a couple of quarterbacks. If that's going to have one shy away from you, so be it. The priority is 2023, obviously.
And what's your latest read, Kevin, on Dante Moore?
Well, you know, it's tricky to sort of state who the big player is outside of Notre Dame when he has a bunch of visits ahead, right? Things will change as visits come ahead. And even though the NIL situation, we've been around it for a little bit of time here, is still sort of uncharted territory where it's still difficult to know, one, what programs, their different schools and NIL deals will be available and in place and pitched. And number two, how each individual recruit will react to that. So that, you know, there's a bit of a guessing game there. But I would say, you know, Miami, talking about multiple trips to there, Josh Gattis is down there. That's something that's important to remember. He was the offensive coordinator at Michigan, of course. Dante Moore was offered there as a freshman, longstanding bond there. Now he's at Miami. There's a bit of, you know, buzz there at the new head coach. They're very aggressive in recruiting right now. And then, of course, I'd keep an eye on Oregon. So I think to talk about who the top contender is, I think that that could change and shift as time goes along here. I still like Notre Dame in the end. But, you know, when there's a fair level of uncertainty there where you don't know when he's going to commit, how many visits he's going to take, the time frame of that. So it's definitely a nerve-wracking affair for Notre Dame, I'm sure. But there's still a fair amount of confidence around there that Notre Dame is going to win that one out.
I feel the same way. It's I think we talked about this on last week's podcast. Like if NIL wasn't a thing, I feel like this would probably be over. And I agree with Kevin. Miami is clearly a player here. As Dante Moore is down there this weekend. But if there was a school that I would be wary of if I was Notre Dame the most, I think it would probably be Oregon. And it's, you know, purely for NIL issues. So it, that would be what I would watch with him. If you see Dante Moore setting an official visit for Oregon, I think that's something to be like, okay. You know, this could turn into a more of a fight than, Notre Dame would like.
Yeah. Before we wrap up segment one and go to questions in segment two, Kevin, any other recruits on the front burner here that you want to talk about?
You know, I think I would just mention, you know, a guy that I've been working on recently is offensive guard Sam Pendleton. I actually got on the phone with his offensive line coach last night. And just to give you a kind of footnotes, because you'll be important to note, myself and Tom Lloyd both predicted him to Notre Dame. He is a 6'4", 300-pound offensive tackle at a high school in North Carolina. His dad is a huge human being who played apparently both ways in the trenches at William & Mary. His twin sister is a star basketball player. He's a 4.0 GPA student. He told me he wants to study mechanical engineering. He visited Notre Dame, and I could really tell that he really took the whole Harry Hiestand and Notre Dame O-line culture in and really loved it. And that's a big part of why we predicted him. Comes from a very sort of Notre Dame profile type family, from what I understand. That's a guy we need to know. Serious lifter in the weight room, very strong, and he'll be a guard at the next level. So that's one to keep an eye on.
And last thing, I believe Tom Loy threw a crystal ball on Devin Houston, the defensive lineman. What can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Devin's really interesting. I watched his film recently, one of his like full game films. Okay, so he is from Ontario. His older brother was an elite basketball recruit who also transferred down to the U.S. and then he went off to Michigan. Devin eventually followed suit, different school, but St. James School, which is an international boarding school in Maryland. It's where Alabama receiver John Metchie played. he's there. He's at 6'5", 270, 275. When I watch him on film, though, with how long he is, he looks and plays bigger than that. And one thing that some people don't know is he also plays left tackle. And his head coach told me a lot of schools are recruiting him as a left tackle as well. Really good feet. Notre Dame's recruiting him in as an interior defensive lineman. Great student, high character kid. He was also a tight end when he first got to that school. So that sort of tells you about his feet, his athleticism. And it's always looked good for Notre Dame. You always wondered about Michigan with his brother having gone there. But now it's looking like Notre Dame's a front runner.
All right, thanks, guys. Coming back, segment two, burning up the boards.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider Podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.
Segment two, burning up the boards. We start with a question from TDISU19. I've heard mixed reviews on Jaden Thomas from different outlets. Some say he looks great and is making a move. Others say he doesn't and has a long way to go. What do the guys inside the Goog think about where he stands at the end of spring?
I think before spring started, I had heard that there were some concerns about, you know, where he was conditioning wise, taking his body from a high school body to a college wide receiver's body. I was not actually at Notre Dame when Stuckey was available to the media. And I know you, Tim, I think you had mentioned on a podcast and written that Thomas had made a move, at least relative to Deion Colsey. And it's like, I have a hard time judging this one because, like, the last practice we were at, they had four scholarship receivers. So, like, he's made a move up the depth chart because there's nobody else there. They need something from him. But I think that's probably more still a developmental guy than a guy that's sort of box ready to go.
I would just add this in terms of just the greater context about Jaden Thomas. When he played at Pace Academy, his wide receiver coach was Terrence Edwards, who's a former pro receiver. He's a very well-known receiver trainer in Georgia. His head coach was Chris Slade, a former Pro Bowl player, and they had other former Pro Bowlers in their coaching staff. You can believe that. Very, very well-coached kid who does everything quite well. And that's, when it comes to young receivers getting on the field, something that keeps them away from that often is not, not being able to block and not being able to focus on the smaller details. So something I sort of like had heard later last fall and something I kind of expected from him going into college is he'd be quite good and well-rounded, all the little things, even if he might not be dynamic and elite with maybe speed or one certain thing. So I think he's I would imagine he's sort of gained the confidence of coaches to go out there and not make fatal errors. Whether he's able to separate and make big plays, I think that's something you just kind of have to prove on the field when you get your chance.
I think I mentioned this in a previous podcast. And one of the things that Stephanie said about him was that, in terms of like physicality, playing physically, he does that very naturally, but that he needs to allow his athleticism to take over a little bit too. So, I was told that Jaden Thomas was ahead of Deion Colsey. Now you have to clarify that a little bit because Colsey started out the spring with an early concussion from the first week. So that put Colsey behind a little bit, but I think generally speaking, they feel like Jaden Thomas is the guy that's a little bit more naturally physical playing the position. And they need him to step forward. They're looking for guys with a little bit more size to play the W position. We've kind of speculated about what they might do there in addition to pursuing, one or two guys with a little bit more size, a little bit more strength. They don't have to be that much bigger. Anything in the 6'2" range is qualifies as a bigger receiver. But, you know, Jaden Thomas is really young. He's a second semester freshman right now. And I think there's some upside there. But he does need to get in between now and August. He needs to get into significant, serious, tremendous physical condition in order to compete at the level that they would like. Next question from Caden MC. I enjoyed the Sean Wooden article. Curious if you think that's an example of an Ohio State alum intuitively understanding how certain things should be done at the very highest level of college football in a way that maybe Brian Kelly didn't, or is it just a personality difference? And what Caden MC is referring to is personality difference with Marcus Freeman. I wrote the story with Sean Wooden, or I interviewed Sean Wooden, and he's another example of a guy. He will be in town for the Blue Gold game, and another example of a former player that is really excited about the inclusion of former players into the current Notre Dame football program. And I've written this and I've said this, I think Marcus Freeman chose Ohio State over Notre Dame. And I think the recruiting process from 20 plus years ago involving Marcus Freeman with Notre Dame, it stuck with him. He understood Notre Dame. He chose Ohio State because it was kind of a family decision, but he understands Notre Dame. And plus he had been here last year as a defensive coordinator and soaked up the Notre Dame environment. So I think it's a combination of all those things. Clearly his personality and his recruiting approach is much different than Brian Kelly's. But I think that he instinctually or naturally knows exactly how Notre Dame functions, and he embraces what Notre Dame has to offer. And I think that we're hearing that and seeing that, as it relates to his recruiting.
I talked to Sean Wooden. I met him at the USC game last year. And then we talked later for our interview on a different story I was working on, actually, on the 30th anniversary of the Sugar Bowl game against Florida. But, once we started talking about Marcus, it's clear that Sean is a guy who is very popular around South Florida, sort of knows everybody down there. And I think that's like Notre Dame could always use more, especially former players, of guys who just know everybody, guys who are sort of plugged into the youth football scene, that are also advocates for Notre Dame itself. So it's, I'm not surprised at all that Marcus is sort of building some of these bridges back up. And look, I mean, Notre Dame has won a bunch of games without the alumni involvement, but it can only be a positive moving forward.
Yeah, it just creates such a more positive atmosphere, and that's why I'm looking forward to this weekend and trying to hook up with some of the guys I've known through the years, that will be in town for this. But yeah, to add a finer point with Sean Wooden, he played with Miami Dolphins, and he ended up, him and his family, settling in Florida, and so he feels like he knows. He didn't, I don't know that we got in too much about the specifics of guys that he played with, but he said, I played with guys in maybe not so much in high school, but college and professionally, that are high school coaches in Florida. So he does feel like he's got a pipeline there that Notre Dame can benefit. The question that Wooden was asking of Marcus Freeman was, how can we help short of contacting recruits, which you're not supposed to do as a graduate? And the response from Marcus Freeman was, well, you can help cultivate the relationship with the coaches in the high school coaches in Florida. So yet another way that former Notre Dame football players can help, the current Notre Dame football team. Question from ND02. I'm sorry, Kevin, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I think we're good to go ahead.
Okay. Question from ND025876. Having interacted with Brian Kelly the last 12 years and knowing people who work for him, do you expect he will negatively recruit against Notre Dame when Dante Moore visits? If so, what aspects do you think he will harp on, i.e. lack of elite quarterback play, lack of explosive wide receivers, academics, faith, parietals? I'm sure Brian Kelly's got a longer list than that.
I tell you, wouldn't the lack of quarterback play be a little bit of self-incrimination there for Brian Kelly? Like,
well, I think maybe he means lack of quarterback development in Notre Dame. Perhaps that's what he meant.
Still, I mean, kind of the same. Like, he was in charge of that.
I hear you.
I would expect Brian Kelly to go pretty hard after Notre Dame. I wouldn't automatically assume it's going to be vindictive. And I remember asking Tony Alford about this when he went to Ohio State. I was like, so like, what's your pitch against Notre Dame? And he's like, I love Notre Dame. Like, but I'm not going to point out the positives of that when I'm recruiting for Ohio State. So, I mean, you could do it in a fair and honest way. I don't like, I think the Dante Moore situation is going to be a rarity. I realize Christian Gray is also interested in LSU. His high school coach is on staff at LSU now, but I don't expect a whole lot of Notre Dame LSU recruiting battles. But I would expect Brian Kelly to be, have some choice ways to spin Notre Dame in a way that sort of turns Dante Moore's head at least a little bit.
Kevin, what was your perspective on the AP story with Ralph Russo that that Brian Kelly contributed to?
Well, I mean, we all saw how he operated at Notre Dame in terms of recruiting. And I think Pete mentioned it last week. It was sort of hilarious to hear him talk about the 6 weeks of recruiting. Well, he really should be recruiting year round, especially for the head coach at a school like Notre Dame. I don't know why I didn't notice that. I only actually sort of picked up on that when Pete mentioned it in the podcast, and that was quite hilarious. You know, I think everything that's going to be read about what Brian Kelly has said is, you know, it'd be overblown a bit. But I did think, you know, some of it was silly. I think the nutrition thing is overblown to an extent. Yes, Notre Dame could use, you know, an advanced treating table, and I think that stuff will come. But we're talking about chefs here and things like that. I saw a lot of comments from people. Oh, you know, Brian Kelly just can't start harping on Notre Dame. Why can't he move on? Well, he was asked the question. You know, he was just answering the question. It's not like he's, you know, drumming up a presser on his own to just go out there and blast Notre Dame.
If Priester and I were in Brian Kelly's office at Baton Rouge, we would be asking these same questions.
Exactly. So, you know, that's my thought on that.
Question from Dashing Domer, and I'm going to go ahead and respond to this first. Is signing five-star quarterbacks the only way to get it done? Sure, Dante Moore is a great prospect, but the overwhelming amount of angst about the process makes one question the sense of all of this. What was Brady Quinn ranked? What was DeShone Kizer ranked? Jarius Jackson, Kevin McDougal, all great Irish quarterbacks who could have challenged for a championship on the right team, and McDougal almost won it. My response to that is, I don't care what Dante Moore is ranked. Look at the film. I mean, I don't care what anybody else ranks Dante Moore. I see a great five-star quarterback prospect. So it's the film. And yeah, those guys can be developed. And that's why, Pete, remember last week when we had the question about if they don't get Dante Moore, will it ruin the class? And I ended up agreeing with you just from a semantic standpoint. But let's say they weren't able to get him, but then they landed a veteran quarterback in the transfer portal that you could plug in place. I mean, it's still my point being at the time was it still has the potential to be a great class, and you want it to be Dante Moore. But if something were to fall through and you could get a grad transfer quarterback that's already experienced, I'm not sure that it would matter that much. But my opinions about Dante Moore have nothing to do with rankings. I love his film.
I mean, this is an issue of how we evaluate what Notre Dame can be. These quarterbacks that are listed, throw Ian Book in there. Heck, you can throw Jack Cohn in there if you want. Like, Notre Dame can make the playoff with a three-star quarterback to win a national championship, to win two college football playoff games. You need more from that position. And if you want to say like, oh, but Stetson Bennett at Georgia, like, yeah. And you know what, if you sign 7 5-star prospects every year, more power to you, but that's what not Notre Dame is not stacked up with that kind of roster. That's like Kevin McDougal was Stetson Bennett. The roster he played on was completely ridiculous in terms of how talented it was. Like, That his senior year was the senior year of the greatest recruiting class in modern history at Notre Dame. So, yeah, I mean, if you could give Ian Book, Aaron Taylor, and Jeff Burris and that level of talent around a BY, like, sure. It's not the only way to do it, but it's the quickest way to do it. in my opinion. It's the Notre Dame can make the biggest, it can make a jump at quarterback with one player that it would probably take 8 or 9 players spread around the roster to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to make the same, like when I was looking at this question, it's the same argument, like basically the question of, do they have to have an elite superstar quarterback to win a national championship? I guess technically no, but to your point, Pete, Georgia, they had, you know, didn't have that superstar quarterback, but their senior class last year was the 2018 recruiting class. They signed 8 5-stars in that one class that made up their senior class last year. You know, what was left of it, which was actually quite a bit. They signed a bunch of 5-stars and big impact players in the classes, you know, beside the 2018 class. So, you know, there would have to be a lot of stars aligning and you'd have to build that type of defense. Now, Notre Dame perhaps can do that 4 years into Marcus Freeman's tenure at Notre Dame, where defensive recruiting picked up. But again, you need those receivers too. You need a cohesive, strong offensive line. You need consistency and taking care of the ball. So many stars need to align. So at Notre Dame, you know, particularly needs that star quarterback when it doesn't have, you know, Alabama and Georgia style recruiting so consistently.
Pete, how high was Brady Quinn ranked? He was ranked pretty highly, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was he was a 4-star top. I don't think he was top 100, but I mean,
he would have been the highest of the group. Prospect. Yeah, the highest of the group mentioned there.
Yeah, I mean, Kaiser was a 4-star prospect. Yeah. I don't remember Jarius Jackson's recruitment at all. That was actually something that was before my time. But it's, you know, you'd rather be able to develop a guy with higher end physical tools than less. I think that's pretty straightforward.
I think that's, you mentioned McDougal and Stetson Bennett. I think that's a legit comparison, especially when you look at what was around them at that time. Question from Golden Bluegrass: with the upcoming spring ball draft, who would be your first pick on Wednesday? On Wednesday, Notre Dame is going to have the draft. Have you heard any details about that?
I have not. I need to make a call about that.
Yeah,
today.
We're 48 hours away
from that. Curious what we're walking into.
I think it has the potential to be kind of fun and, I think it's pretty cool that they're going to allow the media there for it. I think it's a pretty good opportunity for Notre Dame and for us in the media. But so the question is, who would be your first pick in the draft if you are one of the captains that is selecting for Notre Dame that day?
And I think we're assuming that we get to assemble a team for a real game, right? Like a real spring game, opposed to just like a vanilla walkthrough.
Which
Yes. Which might be what we watch on Saturday. So I think even though Michael Mayer is far and away the best player, I have to start with the quarterback that I think is the best on the team. So Tyler Buckner would be my first pick.
Okay. Mayer, Kevin, I hope I'm not stepping all over your answer here, but we don't expect to see a whole lot of Michael Mayer on Saturday in the blue gold game. You can still choose him if you would like, because I would understand you would want a guy like that on your team. But who would be your first pick in the blue gold game draft?
Well, wouldn't you know it? I had Michael Mayer penciled down. Yeah, I also wrote, though, if not Isaiah Foster. I mean, I think, you know, behind him, there's not, you know, it's not like back in the day where there was Julian Okwara and Dalen Hayes. It's sort of Isaiah Foskey, and there isn't another one of those 6'5", 6'6", edge rushers. So, you know, pretty invaluable guy there. It's not Michael Mayer, it's Isaiah Foskey for me.
I have a few choices here. And again, it's based upon backup. And I look at, I mean, really Foskey's backup is Justin Adamolola, who, you know, is going to play 110% every time he's on the field for a snap. So I understand why you'd pick Foskey, but I wouldn't pick him. Some of the guys that I would look at is, you know, guys behind them. Brandon Joseph, to me, is clearly the best safety out there. Alton Fisher, I think, separate themselves as offensive tackles. Really, and I don't think Jack Tizer would be the first pick in the draft, but I think the separation between him and anybody behind him at Rover in terms of knowledge of what they're doing defensively. Bracy as the nickel. But I think if I had to choose one, I guess I would probably say Brandon Joseph, because he's intercepting every other pass that's thrown in his direction this spring, from what we understand. Question from Panthers 2323. With Mitchell Evans' size and skill as a pass catcher, and the wide receiver room's lack of size, do you envision him and Michael Mayer in the red zone package as being a realistic option for Tommy Rees? Kevin?
Oh, yeah, I would say absolutely. I mean, two towering tight ends is always a good idea in the red zone. I would say it would be especially true if, one, Mitchell Evans takes, you know, pretty big step forward and they believe he's a real reliable and consistent pass catcher. And I would say, two, if Deon Colsey hasn't taken a pretty big leap, because you got to think that without Colsey in terms of that body type in the red zone, they don't have really another Chase Claypool, Miles Boykin type. And I know Joe Wilkins isn't 6'4", but he's a pretty big body type and he's out right now. Two towering tight ends in the red zone is sort of a no-brainer for me, especially, like I said, if Mitchell Evans has kind of become a real, you know, reliable pass catcher for them.
It's an interesting idea. I don't know if Rees would go there. Mitchell Evans is, I think, an interesting prospect for, like, probably a year from now as, like, oh, he's Notre Dame's starting tight end and Notre Dame feels good about it. Is he more athletic than George Takacs? I think so. But Kevin's point is probably the best one. If you have not found another receiver like Colsey, Thomas, Lindsey, Wilkins, a grad transfer, to go with Styles, then maybe you want to go two tight ends down there in a space where you can also have Tyler Buchner doing read option to Logan Diggs and running it himself or giving it. I mean, that could be a real pain in the butt to defend.
From what we understand.
Sorry, I was just going to say, there's also the increased blocking element of having two tight ends on the field and running the football, screen game, those types of things too.
Right. We understand that Michael Mayer may have been lobbying recently with Tommy Rees to be more of a target when it comes to the red zone, and that certainly makes sense. And I would even throw in Kevin Bauman's name. I actually talked to him about it last week, and I love talking to Bauman because he's a guy from New Jersey that is not lacking in confidence. And, you know, he believes that that he owns the end zone when it comes to red zone play. So maybe they have three guys there. He's not as tall, probably not as quite as the stature of Evans and Mayer, but he's pretty good in the red zone as well. Tobias Merriweather could be an option too, although we were saying that last year with Colsey and it didn't materialize. Question from Irish from A2. Which player from the 2021 team will Notre Dame miss the most, Pete?
Kyle Hamilton. I don't know. Do I need to go further or can I just leave it there?
Well, I think that, you know, because he was injured, I mean, Kyle Hamilton, the fact is in 2021, Notre Dame had Kyle Hamilton for half a year.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Now, you give me a healthy Kyle Hamilton for 12 games. That's my guy.
Or because he was injured, who would your choice be besides him?
Then it would be Austin. I mean, I don't think you could have a. Could you even mention a candidate beyond those two?
Well, Kyren Williams was so great at what he did, but. Obviously, the running back room is pretty well stocked right now. Not to the level we have a question about this. Not to the level of Kyren Williams, I don't believe. I don't think there's a Kyren Williams there.
How about this is a kind of O'Malley style rephrasing this question? But if I said if you could have Kevin Austin on this team, would it change the record you predicted for Notre Dame to finish this year? I think yes.
I would say I think yes.
But if I gave you Kyren Williams, I would. I'm not sure that I would.
That's a good point.
You know, I think some of that it's so much hinges on what else is at the position. Kevin Austin would be far and away the best receiver on this team.
The thing about Kyren Williams is you always felt like, or at least I did, that if you put the ball in Kyren Williams' hands, he will maximize that opportunity. And I'm not sure that we're ready to say that about any of the running backs. You can't say that about Chris Tyree. I don't think that he's proven that. And Logan Diggs is still, to me, a little bit too much east-west at times. Kevin, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, you guys just ran through everything I was going to say. When the question first popped up, I initially thought, of course, Kyle Hamilton. And I thought, you know what? He was injured and missed most of the season. And then it was, it's got to be Kevin Austin, right? Because, you know, we're kind of – hoping Braden Lindsay take, you know, a pretty big step. Let's just say he doesn't and he's similar to what he was last year. I think you would be missing Kevin Austin quite a bit in that scenario. Beyond him, I was thinking, you know, Kyren Williams as well. And it's like, yeah, like you guys just said, there's a really good stable of backs there. But, you know, he was a guy who put the ball in his hands when you really needed a big play and he would often make it. His screen game ability, but then also his leadership ability and the energy he, you know, inserted to the, in the offense every time he got on the field, that just everything about him is aura. I mean, I guess if you really want to go beyond them, you could talk about Kurt Heinisch, but he's a nose tackle and it's sort of like, you know, it's not exactly, he's not getting the ball in his hands and he's not out in space or anything. So, yeah, I think you got to kind of pick one of the above there.
Yeah, and the thing with Kevin Austin, if he was coming back this year, it would be the Kevin Austin of year two of his development as a full-time player, as right. opposed to last year where he was hit and miss from game to game. And I think a lot of that had to do with just the fact that he hadn't played a whole lot of football in the previous 2-3 years. Question from Jim Booney, CRS. Prince Colley had high expectations coming in from high school. How do you feel he is progressing? And what qualifies as a good year for him in terms of development, in your opinion? Kevin.
Kevin, you go ahead. I mean, we both have sort of gotten to know one of Prince Colley's mentors pretty well over the last year and a half.
Right. Well, first off, I mean, he was really close with Nick Lozinski. And I think when he left, I think in terms of the player it would impact most or who would be most upset about it would be Prince, of course. But I've heard, talking to sources, you know him or close to him, he really likes James Laurinaitis and Al Golden, and that's going well there. Now, for him, it's a difficult situation because you have, I don't know if you call it a full-out logjam, but, you know, you have Bo Bauer and you have J.D. Bertrand, and then you have Maris Liufau back, right? And so I think for him, it's going to be about getting in a rotational role, whether it'll be behind Liufau, which I think it will be. And then he has to shine in those opportunities, right? So it's about making plays, you know, under the lights when he gets those opportunities. It's, you know, it's not an uncommon thing. He's still, you know, he's a freshman right now. He didn't enroll early. And another thing is he came from, you know, a small high school in rural Tennessee. It's not like he was coming from St. John Bosco or Good Counsel. It was a smaller school with lower competition. It was always going to be, an uphill climb for him to mesh well at the college game. But he is, you know, very talented. He looks like what an impact linebacker looks like physically. And hopefully when he gets his opportunities and, again, a rotational role likely behind Liufau, he'll pounce on that opportunity.
I would expect go ahead, Pete.
I was going to say a rotational role, but not in just sort of like a garbage time kind of way. I'm even thinking in terms of, maybe Bo Bauer in 2020. I realize that the position's a little different, but a guy that makes you feel like, okay, he's not a starter, but he's not a backup either. And I think if you can get that one, it'd be great for Colley to make him feel more invested in Notre Dame, but I think it'd be just good for the defense overall.
I agree with what you're saying, but I think it's going to be difficult because they are going to have a hard time taking Liufau off the field.
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm. Right. So
I agree too.
So that means, you know, special teams for Colley, get comfortable, hit some people on special teams, make a name for yourself on special teams like Bo Bauer did. And then, I agree. You don't want it to just be mop up. You'd like to have the confidence that you can insert him in there. But I think like when I look at a guy like Jalen Snead, I think Snead's got further to travel than Colley. Kevin, you mentioned about Colley's background and stuff. I think Snead's going to have further to travel to get to the level where Colley is right now during his freshman year. So we'll see, but he's Prince Colley's a heck of a prospect. Maris Liufau has been in the program a little bit longer and you want to lean on him, but you'd like to see some of Prince Colley at crunch time. Question from Stubber, maybe Stuber. Notre Dame now has an amazing stable of running backs. How do you divvy up playing time? Do you let attrition play out? And if so, who do you see leaving?
Well, I wouldn't go amazing. I think they've got a good group of running backs with potential. In terms of divvying up playing time, I don't know how DeLon McCullough is going to manage that. But I would expect all four of them, and I guess I'm not even including Jabron Payne in this, but if before Payne, I would expect all four of them to play, and which is probably more than anything a compliment to Jadarian Price and how impressive he's already been to the coaching staff. But leaving, I don't know if any of them are going to leave now. A year from now, you know, when they add maybe a couple more guys, I don't think Notre Dame's ever going to have seven scholarship running backs at one time.
Yeah, but it's kind of difficult to say. One thing I always keep in mind at the running back position is there's, you know, it's not always, but it's very often there's an injury. There's one guy who's out, whether it's turf toe or he rolled his ankle in practice. So, you know, there's often when there's injuries, opportunity arises too, whether that means Logan Diggs were to be out for a few weeks and estimate get some more work. I'd be interested to see also with the buzz we've heard about Jadarian Price and how mature I know he is, whether he can sort of transcend the early entry freshman role and kind of get more work than maybe we're expecting through some really good performance. What are we going to see from Estime? Because we haven't seen a lot from him. Also, how often are we going to see two running back sets? Also, you know, Chris Tyree, I kind of assume he'd be the go-to guy on passing downs because he's, you know, known as a good receiver. But, you know, Logan Diggs is a good pass catcher too. He's also a very good pass blocker. So, you know, it's kind of tough to say. I think once we know a bit more about the two back sets and that, we'll know more. And of course, it's always the injury thing is so key at running back. Again, so often an injury, which really shakes things up.
Yeah. I wouldn't say amazing either. If Kyren Williams came back, then we could probably throw that word around a little bit, but it's a very good group and one that you can build upon. You know, DeLon McCullough talked about the various roles. He says there's, you know, seven or eight roles that the running backs can play, down in distance playing a big part in that. That's easier said than done, though, of course. So, you know, we'll see. I don't want to speculate about anybody leaving now. It's not going to happen at the end of the spring. There really shouldn't be any reason for any of the running backs to feel that way. And, Kevin, why don't you throw in your comments about Jabron Payne and what he brings to the backfield?
Yeah, you know, I watched a bit of his highlight film when he was offered by Notre Dame, but that recruitment didn't really develop much more, so I didn't spend much time looking at him. But when, you know, we came to know that he was going to be visiting Notre Dame and likely committing to Notre Dame, I went back into his film, and what had happened was he missed most of his junior season with an ankle injury, missed most of his senior season. He played most of his sophomore year. When I look back on his sophomore season film, at that time, they had a running back, Cam Porter, who is now a running back at Northwestern. He was a senior at the time, and he was very good. But Jabron Payne was, even as just a sophomore, who, by the way, was wearing a cast on his wrist because he had a broken wrist at the time, he was too talented to keep off the field. And I was, like, very, very surprised with what I saw when I watched his film in terms of pure speed. And he's one of those running backs where – in and out, he explodes and accelerates out of his cuts. Oftentimes you see running backs, obviously, you know, naturally you have to sort of slow down when you break down and cut. He is so explosive in and out of his cuts. If he can stay healthy, I think I'm almost certain he's going to be a real pleasant surprise and someone we all kind of consider a steal. Has to stay healthy, though, and we haven't seen that from him yet.
Final question today from Sigles, and it's, when the 2022 season wraps up, who will have been the most impactful coaching addition, Chancey Stuckey or DeLon McCullough?
Best case scenario, Stuckey, right? I mean, I think Notre Dame has good running backs, which we just talked about. Receiver? A lot of development necessary, a lot of recruiting necessary.
This is, this is like first pick in a draft. You got to look at this is behind
the upside one for Stuckey is massive. So I think that's why he will have the biggest impact.
I have to agree. And I have to say, recently talking to, you know, a parent of a recruit who visited Notre Dame and then spent time with Stuckey. The way that they talk, like, everyone raves about coaches when they meet them in interviews and that. It's a different type of raving about Chancey Stuckey when I talk to people. And then I ended up interviewing a head coach in Georgia about a recruit, and it just so happened Chancey Stuckey played at that same high school, and this coach was Coach Stuckey's coach in high school. He was an assistant coach at the time. And the way everyone talks about him, yeah, I know everyone raves about coaches, but no, this guy is something special. And I keep hearing that from everyone who's crossed paths with him. Also, when you just talk about, is it going to be Stuckey or McCullough again, what you guys just said, yeah, the estimate Diggs, Price, they're all freshmen, so there's some stuff to work on there. But those guys are all very talented. Receivers, a much bigger job, and there's much more opportunity there to make some big splashes because there's, again, there's a lot that needs to be worked on there. But, I mean, I would love to hear what you guys also have to say about Stuckey in terms of what you've heard and your own impression of him when you spoke with him in a press room.
No, he's easily, he impresses you very easily. And that's why, you know, I think when Tommy Reese, I spoke to him about this. I mean, when he interviewed Stuckey, it was basically over at that point. I know there's talk about the receivers coach at Purdue who moved on, but I think everybody that comes in contact with Chancey Stuckey, look, how many people have we quoted in the last few months about how they feel about Chancey Stuckey from way back? I started with Brady Quinn, and it's gone on from there. He's an extremely impressive guy with a lot of enthusiasm. Dylan McCullough's a little bit more of a grizzled veteran, obviously. Stuckey really just getting started in the coaching game. But I would have to agree that it's him. Not that McCullough's going to do a poor job coaching those running backs. He has good material to work with, and his background in the profession is extensive and great. So I think they'll both have an impact, but I think the greater impact is going to be with Stuckey. We appreciate you joining us today. We'll be back on Friday, April 22nd for Irish Illustrated Insider.